Today on Maine Calling, on Arbor Day, we discuss how to choose and care for trees. National Arbor Day is today, a day to celebrate trees, and there are lots of trees here in Maine, about 24 billion. Still, there are room for more, and each tree planted in Maine, if chosen, planted, and cared for well, can bring great benefits to human health, climate, wildlife, and more. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk with some experts about selecting trees, warding off damaging insects and diseases, pruning, and more. We'll answer your questions about how to tell if a tree is healthy or needs to be removed, growing fruit trees for nourishment, and the overall health of Maine's forest. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Trees offer shade, privacy, and beauty to your yard, and they are beneficial to people and the planet, but they are not maintenance-free. Well, today is National Arbor Day, and to mark that holiday, we're going to learn about planting and caring for trees in your landscape. Joining me, three tree experts, Aaron Bergdahl, who is a forest pathologist with the Maine Forest Service at the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. Bill Berman, who is a licensed professional forester, certified master landscaper, and certified arborist. He is the founder of Berman Land and Tree Company. And CJ Walk, Orchard Program Manager for Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, or MOFCA, and the Maine Heritage Orchard. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you thinking of planting a tree in your yard? Do you have questions about something like when to prune or how to deal with pests or whether a tree needs to come down? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for joining us so much. Aaron, I'll start with you. It is National Arbor Day today, and a big part of why this holiday was started was to encourage people to plant trees, based on the idea that trees are good for us, good for the landscape, good for the planet, good for human health. I know that there are 24 billion trees in Maine. Is it? Can we still make that argument that if you're a homeowner, it's a good idea to plant a tree?
Absolutely. Trees provide so many services of great diversity of services, not only in the natural environment, but in our horticultural, our home environments, our city environments. In order to keep a healthy and sustainable tree resource, you got to keep planting because trees get older, they die. And to keep our 17.5 million acres of forest here in Maine sustainable, tree planting is a great way to do that.
All right, Bill, I'm going to turn to you. I'm a homeowner. I'm thinking I'd like to plant a tree. How do I decide what to plant? Which species? How big? What do you recommend?
Well, a little bit of that, of course, would be personal preference as to what you want in the end. But probably one of the first things that you need to do is you need to look at the infrastructure around your building or your building envelope anyway, and try to pick a spot that you won't have interference over time with your tree or with the roots, septic systems, gas lines, sewer lines, all things that, you know, don't need service that much, but will need to be entered at some point, and you don't want to be damaging the roots of your tree or the crown of your tree when you enter those areas, plus overhead conductors in your building. Trees are small when you plant them, but they slowly get larger until they're very large, take up a lot of room, got to have a lot of space. Then do your research, figure out what kind of tree would fit in the area that you have.
So think about whether you're looking for shade or whether you're looking for just beauty. Or Aaron, you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind people of the call before you dig hotline that you can call before you pick up the shovel and start digging a hole in your yard. You just want to make sure that you don't hit any of your important infrastructure. You certainly don't want to have an accident getting into underground power lines or other things. So call before you dig. That's the first thing you do before you pick up the shovel so that you make sure that you get all that stuff mapped out.
Yeah, good tip. And Bill, a good thing to do is look carefully at that tag when you're at the nursery, right? See what how tall that tree is going to get.
Absolutely. You want to know what you're planting. And if you're getting it from a nursery, you might want to know where it came from and then get right to the specifics of the individual tree that you have selected.
Yeah. CJ, I know your expertise is in fruit trees, and I think a lot of people love the idea of having a fruit tree in their yard. It's not so simple, though, as just going and buying, say, one pear tree and putting it in a sunny spot, is it?
That's true. I think all those location considerations that have been mentioned so far are pretty key. The fruit trees really want to be full sun if you're looking to get a good fruit crop out of them. So thinking about that location in your yard or around your area. But another thing to consider is that the majority of our fruit trees are grafted onto some type of rootstock, and that rootstock really controls the overall size of the tree as it matures. So being aware of the space you have, and then also making sure you're selecting the right type of tree grafted onto the proper rootstock for your space.
And aren't certain fruit trees, CJ, don't they have to have partners? Aren't there some that don't do well alone?
True, the majority of them need to have pollinators nearby so that you get good cross-pollination and fruit production. So your apples and pears definitely need a good pollinator companion. But we can also grow peaches here, which are self-fertile, tart cherries. But in most cases, if even those self-fertile trees have another one nearby, pollination is improved. So it's always good to think about pairing.
Pairing trees. Okay, I'm going to go back to you, Aaron, and I want to ask you, we're having this conversation in April, toward the end of April. It's about to rain all weekend. Is this a good time to plant a tree?
Sure, this is a great time. Your trees are still dormant, and they're maybe starting to wake up a little bit underground with some root growth. But this is a great time to get a tree in a spot, plant it right, and it should, get a really great head start once the spring showers subside and we get some sun and better growing conditions for your typical tree.
So Liz on Facebook writes, I think people over-fertilize trees, shrubs, perennials, and lawns too, at the expense of water quality and the plant's health. If planted well, they don't need it. If growing naturally, they'll be fine. If they still wonder, they could test the soil to see what the nutrients are there already and if the pH allows for uptake. Less is sometimes more. So I'll go back to you, Erin. Is her advice right? Just put that tree in the ground. Don't fill up that hole with manure. Don't fertilize it obsessively that first year.
Yeah, if you really want a tree to establish well, you want to grow it in native soil. So you don't want to have too many soil amendments. And also the advice to get a soil test is great because you don't want to put something into the system that's not needed. You don't want to, over-fertilize if there's definitely enough NPK or nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium in the soil. You really don't need to have those inputs that will, eventually run off or leach away. So you don't want to, waste your money on that kind of thing. And it's also a positive thing for the environment to not overapply.
Bill, do you also want to think about what other kind of trees are in your community? I know that the tree warden in my town said that we have way too many oaks in proportion to other trees, and you might want to ask somebody what would be beneficial to my community?
Well, of course, oak's a good one right now, anyway. But Diversity is probably the best thing that we can do in today's changing world, since we don't know which trees will be viable down the road. I mean, the life of some of these trees is 200 or 300 years, and we're not having a really good track record with the trees we have now, staying disease, insect and disease free. As far as what specific trees would grow, a lot of that would be site specific. And if you want to if you want to get an idea of what to plant, maybe in a specific area, you would just take a walk around, see what else is growing there, and see if anything else stands out to you that does well in that particular area.
Okay. CJ, you mentioned peach trees before. Are there varieties of fruit trees that you find people are surprised they can grow in Maine?
I think peaches, for kind of getting central and up into northern Maine, can be surprising for folks that they can be grown successfully. Usually, when we have workshops and things like that here at MOFCA, if we're working up in Aroostook County, that might be a little bit more challenging. But oftentimes, a homeowner in their yard might have a sheltered spot or a little bit of a microclimate that can protect that more tender tree from those really harsh winter winds and some of the elements. So that can be a useful tool in your site selection, looking for those microclimates.
Aaron, I think earlier Bill said something like if you're buying it from a nursery and it has a tag, which makes me think a lot of people may be perhaps going into the woods to find a sapling or getting something from a neighbor. What is your guidance about thinking about getting trees that way?
Well, first, I'd want to, urge people, if you are going to transplant trees, do it locally. Don't transplant something from way further south. In doing that, you might bring unwanted invasive organisms into our forest systems and our urban forest environments as well. So, if you're going to do some transplanting, do it locally, and understand that a tree that's grown in a nursery situation or in a pot is going to have a very different root system than one that's grown in a natural setting. So you may have a little bit less success depending upon how much root ball you get, how much damage you cause to the tree. It can be done, but you have to sort of temper your expectations on how well that tree is going to do.
Okay. Bill, let's talk about instead of planting trees, let's talk about trees that you might already have in your landscape. You've moved into a new house. You're looking out in the yard and there's a tree that you think, boy, that's a big tree. It looks old. It could fall on my house. We've had some really wild weather in the wintertime in the last couple years, especially a year ago. Talk to me. Talk to me as a new homeowner who's concerned about the old trees in his or her yard.
First of all, you probably need to get somebody qualified to do just a quick informal assessment of what you've got. A lot of it doesn't need to be real picky information, but you can do a lot with a walkthrough. A couple of things to think about is if you don't have if the trees lean away from your building and lean back towards a wood line or something, you can accept more defect than you could with a tree that, say, leans at your house or at your power line or driveway or whatnot. The size of the tree doesn't really matter for defect. A lot of things that you would look for would be crotch structure. That's probably almost number one, assuming that the trees are alive. And if they're not alive, then that's kind of out of the question anyway. But crotch structure, look down around the root collar area. If you see any decay, missing bark, that type of things, those are all red flags that that would trigger further investigation. Good to look at the trees without leaves on them, so you can actually see the structure, see the crotches, and then again, look at them with leaves on them. You can get a little better idea how well the tree's doing by looking at the quality of the foliage.
And it's not always a choice between leaving it up and leaving it down, is it?
No, Not at all. A lot of trees can be pruned and repaired if it's a decent candidate for that. A lot of different options exist for keeping trees in your on your property. But then again, you definitely want to run that by somebody qualified who can kind of guide you in that direction.
If you're talking about a big old oak or a big old ash, you want to have an arborist come. You don't want to be swinging from ropes or going up a really large ladder into your tree with a saw. But CJ, if you've got smaller trees and you want to try to do some pruning yourself, what is your guidance for that?
Yeah, typically for the majority of the fruit trees, we focus on most of the pruning happening in the dormant season. So at the tail end of winter, maybe mid-February through March, and getting to this time of year now, early or mid-April towards late April, things have been a little bit cooler. So I feel like the fruit trees, at least here in Unity, are a little bit behind where they might be, but we're really focusing on a lot of that pruning in the dormant season. You can see the full tree structure, and really focus on good tree structure. And then also, the trees really want to be open and airy. So as they are fully leafed out, producing fruit, you have good airflow, good sunlight movement throughout the tree. And that helps with a lot of different pathogen management, as well as good fruit, ripening and overall growth.
And I know there's a lot of great guidance online, a lot of cooperative extension videos. MOFCA has videos, and you want to look at what variety of tree you have. But generally speaking, I think it's a little bit scary for people sometimes to prune their own tree or their own shrub. And would you say, don't be afraid? Trees are resilient. Just go ahead and study up and give it a try.
Definitely. And that's one of the, we see that every winter with all the pruning workshops we offer through MOFCA. Oftentimes people are really nervous that they're going to do something wrong and they're going to kill the tree. I hear that a couple times every winter. And I just try to reassure folks, as long as you're not cutting it at the base at ground level, make good proper cuts with sharp tools. Think about sanitation if disease presence is an issue. But really, with the fruit trees, they're pretty resilient organisms, and they can handle a few mistakes as you learn to prune along the way. I think we've all learned by doing quite a bit.
Well, we do need to take a break, but I do want to talk about disease. I know that there's some serious diseases, Aaron, that you all are keeping an eye on. We are talking about trees on Arbor Day. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, trees, tree selection, maintenance, common diseases and pests, and when a tree might need to be removed. My guest, Bill Berman, who is a certified arborist, landscaper, and forester with Berman Land and Tree Company, CJ Walk, Orchard Program Manager for MOFCA and the Maine Heritage Orchard, and Aaron Bergdahl, Forest Pathologist with the Maine Forest Service. We invite you to join the conversation. What are your tree care questions? Do you have a spectacular tree in your yard you want to tell us about? Email talk@mainepublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram. And of course, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Aaron, I'm going to ask you about diseases. I personally have a beautiful ash tree on my property. We have been treating it for emerald ash borer and crossing our fingers. So why don't we start with that one? It's in every county now, isn't it?
I believe so. And one way you can check your town's EAB situation is by checking out the Maine Forest Service Emerald Ash Borer dashboard, which can just be found by putting that information into a search engine, and you can see a real-time map of where Emerald Ash Borer is in the state, what year it was found, and so forth. Really, a really handy tool to keep track of where this pest is, and therefore whether you should be thinking about treating for Emerald Ash Borer. Emerald Ash Borer has really been spreading quite a bit recently. It was just found in Boothbay Harbor, the town of Boothbay Harbor, this spring. It's a little bit further away than kind of the core, one of the core areas in the south where we've been finding it. One thing we really rely on heavily with the Maine's Forest Service, our Forest Health and Monitoring Group is a pretty small group, and we got a big state to keep track of. So we really value the vigilance of the public. And one thing that we ask people to look out for this time of year, especially, is blonding of ash trees. And that's when woodpeckers are flecking bark off of ash trees in search of larvae. Could be native larvae, or it could be larvae of the emerald ash borer. Those woodpeckers are feeding on that larvae pretty heavily right now. So if you see a tree that's been heavily blonded, or looks funny because it has a pile of bark underneath it, give us a call. We'll have somebody come and check it out and see if it is cause for further investigation to see if it's a new location for emerald ash borer.
And once a tree has it, it's too late, right? You have to, prophylactically treat, right?
Well, if you catch the infestation early enough, there are some methods. If you contact a certified pesticide applicator or a forester, they can evaluate the status of the tree and see if it's worth treating. If the tree still has a fairly healthy crown, it can uptake the pesticides that can be injected directly into the tree to, kind of rehabilitate that tree. It's not like Dutch elm disease, for example. Like once Dutch tree gets Dutch elm disease, there's really no excellent way to stop the progression of that disease. But emerald ash borer is an insect, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, and so tell me about some of the other diseases that you really want landowners to keep an eye out for. Hemlock woolly adelgid still a concern?
Hemlock woolly adelgid is still a concern. Like emerald ash borer, it's spreading. There are times during the year where you need to be careful about doing work within hemlock stands and then moving to new areas. There's a life stage called the crawler stage. That's an active stage so you really want to limit your activity in hemlocks during certain times of the year. And that information can be found on our website with Maine Forest Service. Another disease that we're tracking is called beech leaf disease. It's caused by a foliar nematode, which is a microscopic roundworm. That's one that's spreading very rapidly in the state and causes deformation and banding of beech leaves, hence the name. And it's hasn't really caused mortality yet, but we're tracking this disease. It's fairly new. We found it for the first time in 2021, and now it's spread to all counties except for Franklin County. But it is a it's a disease that we're learning more about kind of as we go.
And if you've been following the news, you know that there's been a lot of talk in the legislature. The governor wants to put aside money to, or I think has put aside money to help fight the dreaded spruce budworm. Where is that now? I mean, I know that that was just devastating to Maine's forest industry a few decades ago. Are we possibly seeing the same thing again?
It's a little bit too early to tell if we're going to have the same kind of outbreak that we did back in earlier times here in Maine, but there is a pretty significant acreage of our softwood forest in the northern tiers of counties that are being impacted by this. And there has been some federal and state money allocated to address this in the form of cost share. And so that's a story that's developing, and it's been in the news a little bit, and I suspect more information will be coming out about this in the next month or so as some of the proactive measures are taken to address the problem.
So it's a good idea for a homeowner as much as possible. I understand if you have a lot of acreage, it might not be, but for many of us who have a yard, to know what kind of trees you have, to spend some time looking at them and to notice if you see any damage, see anything different.
Absolutely. I think scouting is something that's that we need to emphasize a little bit more. Go out when you take that evening walk in your yard, look at all the functional parts of your tree and see if you notice anything that's abnormal. And if you see something abnormal, take a picture of it and then rely on your experts, share that information with them, and just get informed about these things and catch them early, because catching things early is the best way towards rehabilitating a tree or just keeping a resilient functional landscape.
Just like our own health. We're going to go to Joanne calling from Naples. Hi, Joanne, go ahead.
Hi, Jen. Thank you. We are on the lake, and I have a neighbor that has probably 10 oak trees that are right on the border, technically his property. I've asked him repeatedly to split the cost of trimming. He refuses. But I get our trees, which are about 20 trees, sprayed every year. And I had a beautiful triple maple that had to come down because one of the trees, and it was like a three-limb cluster, one of those had gotten red ants. It was right next to the garage, so it broke my heart, but that had to come down. Now I'm looking, and one of the oak trees on the neighbor's side has a large patch, probably 10 inches tall. And just as you indicated, the bark is gone. It looks infected to me. I had the pesticide fellow that does our trees every year look at it. Obviously, he was unwilling to spray theirs, but he said it does look infected. We've had all these scenarios you talked about, the down limb in the driveway blocking it, the limb falling and taking out the power line and transformer. I mean, these trees are all 100 years old.
Joanne, is your question what you can do about a neighbor's trees that might be affecting your property?
Well, I'm interested. I've gotten arborists down here, and not all of them are risk assessment people. What kind of diseases do oaks get that would take out the rot the bark and that kind of thing?
Bill, I'll turn to you.
So oak's pretty tough in general. A lot of the things that we've had that bother oak have been impacting the foliage more than anything. That would be brown-tail moth, which you may or may not have on Sebago. And, at times we've had gypsy moth, winter moth. But generally those don't affect anything on the main stem of the tree. You could be just seeing some type of decline, and it's showing now because the bark's starting to peel off. A lot of times that's construction damage or whatnot. Oak's pretty rot resistant, pretty resilient. Also might add that when you have a tree that grows across your property line, you own the parts that are over your property, so you do have some leeway to work on a tree that may or may not originate on your side of the line.
Joanne, thanks for your question. And we have an email here from Val, which is related, talking about treating trees with injected pesticides. Val says this will kill every insect that feeds on the tree, great for wild birds that feed on insects and the overall ecology. Tricky question, isn't it, Bill? Because there are trees that will die if not treated, but let's go back to the ash tree. If that's treated, what does that do to the insects? Is this damaging for the food chain if that woodpecker eats the insect?
Well, depends on which study you read, I suppose. But the chemical that is being used in ash primarily to control EAB, pretty similar to what we've been using for brown-tail moth as well, should reside primarily in the wood and leaf tissues of the tree for a period of time up to 2 years. It is not supposed to enter the fruit or flower of these trees. That's the current thinking. Probably in time we'll find out if that's the case or not. But the current thinking is that some of these aren't necessarily getting out into the environment to a large degree anyway. They're residing in the tree.
We'll go to Tim, who's calling from West Baldwin. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
How many of those are you going to get?
Tim, are you there?
Give or take.
I think Tim doesn't know that we're there. Tim, can you hear me?
Are those 1 grams or half grams?
Okay, we're going to hope that Tim calls back. In the meantime, Aaron, I think you were going to jump in and talk about balancing, thinking about a pesticide versus saving your tree.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to make the point that you really have to, definitely don't treat for something that's not there. So, you use these things sparingly. They're very good at what they do. But you don't want to treat for something that's not there. There's a lot of different chemistries that are used. It's important to select something that has the absolute lowest residual impact to accomplish your treatment goals. And if treatment or control can be done another way, we always encourage people with brown tail moss to clip off the nests in the wintertime. And that's the lowest impact way to control that particular pest. It's getting a little bit late to do that now, but if you compare clipping out brown tail moth nests and destroying them now versus the brown tail moths causing major defoliation here during the growing season, I think you're probably better off doing the clipping. And just to talk about brown tail moth for a second, we have people that are out monitoring this pest constantly. There's also a dashboard for this particular pest, and it won't be long before the larvae are going to start to get out of their nests and spend more time outside, even start feeding a little bit on buds. So, if you're thinking about controlling brown tail moth, you're getting pretty close to the end of the time where you can do it with the least possible impact.
All right, we'll go to Peter calling from Augusta. Hi, Peter, go ahead.
Hi, I have a violet pear tree that I planted probably like 6 or 7 years ago. It's probably about, I don't know, probably about 16, 18 feet tall. And it always flowers, but it never gives any fruit. I was wondering what I could do to, so that way I could get some fruit on it.
CJ, sounds like a question for you. A pear tree that's beautiful, but not fruiting.
Yeah, I guess the first question is if you have another pear of a different variety in the vicinity that can help for pollination. So, and within pears, I don't have all the info, right in my head, but there are some varieties that will not work well, cross-pollinizing or pollinating each other. So you definitely want to look to have two to help pollinate each other. I have seen folks who, say in more of an urban area or residential area with one pear tree that they're trying to manage, there's not space to plant another. But I have seen folks go during bloom time and cut blooming shoots out of another pear, even maybe a wild seedling pear, and putting those like in a glass jar of water during bloom time. Both of the trees are blooming, and strapping a jar of blooms from a different tree into the tree in their yard and hoping that pollinators start mixing the pollen from this other tree with the one that's in your yard. So usually it comes down to a pollination piece if it's blooming and not producing fruit.
All right, Peter, good luck to you. An email here from Rob. If I want to plant white oaks via acorns, is there a method of collection and planting your guests recommend? Which of you wants to take that one? Do you just stick a acorn in the ground, or is there more to it?
Probably there's not much more than that. You grab a bunch of them and put them in some pots, let them sit, and they will sprout.
All
And
right. Yeah, put them in
the
pots first and then transplant
oh,
them into the ground.
absolutely, a bunch of them, and you'll get a few. Some will, some won't, but it's easy to plant a bunch of acorns. So then, if at the end you end up with a couple trees, you're doing well.
It kind of depends upon your squirrel population too, because if you don't protect those white oak acorns, the squirrels can get into them. I've had that happen trying to sprout some black walnuts, for example. The squirrels found them, and I wasn't successful.
So you put them in the pot and then you build a fortress around them. Is that what you're saying, Aaron?
Maybe a little bit of like a hardware cloth or something, just to keep the squirrels off them until they sprout up.
And CJ, you're nodding. Same thing for a fruit tree from seed.
Well, typically we're not growing fruit trees from
That's right, you're
seed. They're
grafting.
usually coming grafted from root stocks, but we have grown different hardwoods here, and I think one thing's with oaks and some of those trees that have really vigorous and long tap roots, you want to pay attention to not damaging that tap root when they're young, because that can really set back something like an oak.
So I'm going to go to Mike. I'm calling from coastal New Hampshire. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, so I'm calling. I heard your guest from Mofka talking before about fruit trees and about, you know, the early pruning, structural pruning that you do in order to, well, set the tree off on the right course structurally, but also to open it up for airflow on the interior of the crown. And that's obviously what we need to do for growing fruit and healthy fruit that doesn't develop fungal issues and so forth. But that, I think because that's common knowledge and it has been for some time, it has been misappropriated onto big trees. And so when we think about a tree, it has a certain amount of photosynthetic area. And when we're removing interior growth for the sake of thinning for airflow, it's actually deleterious to the health. It's bad for the tree in the long term. It's going to it's gonna take away the energy that the tree is capturing where the tree needs it, because trees are smart. They put out sprouts most of the time where they want that energy. And so just wanted to remind guests, as a 28-year arborist working with trees, I've been able to see trees decline and fail because somebody was fixated on that lower canopy pruning, because that, you can see that pruning, and it's something that's easy to recognize. The limbs might be in your way. Obviously, you want to be able to manage your airspace and prune for structure in a good way, but as best as you can, try to leave the interior sprouts and the lower sprouts, because they're really doing a great service to the tree.
CJ, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think when we get into pruning, when we teach classes, I try to let folks know there really is no equation. I approach pretty much every tree as a unique tree, and methods can be different depending on what you're looking to achieve. But I do agree about that internal growth is pretty key. Oftentimes, when we see an older tree that has not been pruned, the canopy up above is very thick. A lot of what was growing on the interior has been shaded out for a number of years, and that wood is dying back. So when we open up the tree, I do like to see sunlight and airflow coming through, but we also want new growth to be stimulated by that sunlight striking the bark, invigorating latent buds to start new shoot growth, so you can have more kind of like replacement growth or limbs over time. So there is no recipe or equation, is how I always approach it.
Mike, thanks so much for your call. We do need to take another quick break. We're talking about trees on Arbor Day. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about trees on Maine Calling today. Our guests, three experts with me today, CJ Walk, a fruit tree expert with Mofka, Aaron Bergdahl, forest pathologist with Maine Forest Service, and Bill Berman, longtime arborist with Berman Land and Tree Company. Share your comments and questions. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. A couple people here recommending trees. Casey on Facebook writes, "A wonderful native tree to Maine is the moosewood. It has other names too. In the fall, the very large maple-like leaves turn a wonderful mellow yellow, and brown-tail moths don't seem to affect it." Aaron, is moosewood a native tree, and is that one you recommend for a yard?
Well, it always depends upon the right tree for the right place philosophy. It's more of a shade tolerant tree, so it's not one that you want to put out in the middle of the yard where it's going to get a lot of really intense sun. It's a medium stature tree, so it's great for an area where you don't want a really large tree over time. It's a fairly slow grower. It's a very beautiful tree. It's got striped bark. It's a very nice characteristics, but it's really only going to provide those services of being, beautiful and so forth if it's in the right spot.
All right. An email here from Rob. "It takes thousands of caterpillars to raise a clutch of chickadees and other bird species. The caterpillars are preferred and often exist on keystone species for Maine: oak, black cherry, willows, etc. If you are looking for trees, keep this in mind, please. And Bill, just the other day, we did a program for Earth Day on planting native species to help the environment. Rob has named oak, black cherry, willows. Would you like to add to that list?
They're probably different forms of mass that come from a lot of different trees that support different varieties of wildlife. I can't think of a tree that doesn't have some benefit to wildlife. I'd say most of them are pretty darn good and beneficial. And of course, we have quite a few here already. But I can't see any negative effects from any species, really.
Okay. An email here from Angus. CJ, what's your favorite way of dealing with Marsonia other than pruning the tree? Some apple varieties are so susceptible that increasing air circulation doesn't help much. This is a fungal disease where you will observe your apple trees turning yellow and then falling off, your apple leaves turning yellow and then falling off the tree. It normally occurs in the lower branches and then goes up through the rest of the tree. Am I pronouncing that right? Marsonia?
Marsonina or Marsonina.
Marsonina, okay.
Where you are. And that is a relatively newer fungal disease that we're seeing in Maine, having moved up from southern New England and beyond into Pennsylvania, maybe. And it is a real challenge because it does cause that defoliation over the course of the season. So typically, fungal disease we're primarily concerned with apples is apple scab. So both fungal diseases, but the activity of Marsonina is a little different. And it seems like signs of infection don't show up for 30 to 45 days after the infection has occurred. So it definitely has become a challenge for organic management for sure. And that pruning, airflow, sunlight piece can help out. But usually if you're getting into managing fungal situations, you need to think about the proper timing. And usually it's the application of some type of sulfur product as a fungicide. But I know that is definitely a disease of concern that is relatively new on the scene.
An email here from Sandy. We'd like to plant some evergreens at the back of our yard as a visual screen, but don't want them to get too tall, 15 to 20 feet max. What can you recommend? Bill, what do you recommend?
So everything's got some drawbacks. I'd recommend putting something in and pruning it. Hemlock would be pretty good because you can maintain that as you're really looking at a hedge here if you're talking about 15 feet, not a tree. Arborvitae works pretty well as long as you don't have too many deer. Your hemlock hedge, I suppose, could fall victim to HWA if it ever actually shows up where you live. But a lot of your spruce and pine species are you're really going to have to stay on them because they really want to become trees.
Okay.
Not a hedge.
An email here from Ella. Can you ask your guests about the current status of winter moths? Aaron, that one's for you.
Okay. So winter moth is a really a positive story in terms of integrated pest management here in Maine. We have a biocontrol program where we have people that go out and collect parasitized winter moths, rear out the flies. They're actually reared out, I believe, they're sent to Massachusetts and screened, and then we rear them out here, and then we release these flies that lay eggs on leaves. The winter moth larvae eat those leaves, and then the fly larvae hatch out of those winter moth larvae. And that biocontrol is working extremely well. And we've seen evidence of it spreading along the coast where winter moth is typically a problem in oak trees.
All right. So so a little bit of good news on one front.
Yeah, it's a great program.
We'll go to Mike calling from Wiscasset. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi. I bought a house here in Wiscasset a couple of years ago that came with two apple trees. And they never seem to produce flowers. Instead, what happens is that the leaves emerge normally, and then They all seem to start to wilt, and it doesn't happen very fast, but, you know, nothing else seems to develop. I'll add that they're not very old. I think the older of the two, maybe 4 inches and 5 inches in diameter at the stem, and the other one is much younger, maybe 2 inches. So they might just not be old enough to fruit yet, but I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, some of the common issues with younger fruit trees. One thing I would check is right around the base of the tree, right around the root collar at the soil line, dig back a little bit. You may notice some vole damage from chewing on the young tender bark over the winter. So typically we're looking to put some type of vole guard for the winter months only to protect any girdling from voles. But there's also a very common pest in like no spray, low spray situations, common for home growers, is the round-headed apple borer. So that is a beetle that lays eggs right at the soil line. The egg hatches, or the larva hatches out of the egg and burrows just under the bark and starts feeding on that cambium layer. And they are internal, so it's very difficult to know that they're there without some good scouting. And they tend to be in the tree for two seasons, and a 2-inch diameter apple tree could very easily be girdled interiorly by one larva in 2 years. And that just disrupts the flow of water and nutrients from the root system up to the top of the tree. So a very common symptom is a tree starts to leaf out in the spring because a lot of that energy is coming from the buds or the bark. But once it starts to call for nutrients from the roots and that system has been disrupted, that's when we see, you know, mid-May towards the beginning of June, start to see leaves starting to really crinkle up and die, blooms, if it's blooming, browning and falling off. So inspect the base.
If he has those, can it be treated?
The borers, the best way to go about it is to get down on your hands and knees with a sharp knife. You'll see signs of their frass, which is their excrement, and it looks like really moist orange sawdust coming out at the base of the tree. So I just use my pocket knife, carve a little circle around that opening, and follow the dead wood, and you'll see the chamber where the larva is heading, and just keep cleaning out that dead wood, and you should eventually find it. They can be challenging, but usually just going after it with a knife and maybe a piece of wire that you can poke into a cavity is the best way to go.
Good luck to you, Mike. Here's an email. I have a beautiful, huge old beech tree in my front yard that now has beech leaf disease. Last summer, an arborist treated it by spraying it several times. Is there anything else that you're now recommending? I live in Kittery. Bill.
So there are a few things coming down the pike for beech leaf disease, though I don't think that anything has been proven yet. We've done a little bit with a high phosphate fertilizer, which is being used. It can work as a fungicide, even though the causal agent is a nematode. We've seen a little bit of success with that. There are a couple of injectable systemics that they're doing trials with. Not sure what the long term on that is going to be. This is all very new to us.
Aaron, you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, so there is an injectable product. The active ingredient is thiobenzodol, and it's similar to what's been used in some cases for Dutch elm disease in the past, but it's proven to be a fairly effective nematicide. It's a macro injection system, which means that you're putting a lot of fluid and this active chemistry into the tree. So it's a fairly closed system, and the trials, these injections that have been done in other states have proven to provide symptom-free growth or very low symptoms for at least a couple years, maybe as many as three before reinjection needs to occur. So there's a lot of work being done on this. There's a lot of progress occurring, and we're getting more tools. Nothing for, you know, the landscape scale, but for individual trees, there are some tools in the toolbox to try.
All right. And really quickly, we just have a few seconds, Aaron, but an email from Ellen. Please address how these diseases travel, including wood from away and plants from nurseries.
Those are two really, really common ways that human beings move around these invasive pests. You know, all these pests, they can spread by themselves, but they really can travel great distances when helped by humans. And firewood is one of those things that's regulated. We really push the message, you know, there's a lot of trees in Maine. Use local firewood. Don't transport it great distances. Burn it as close to where you buy it as possible. And also, you know, we have regulations in place for not transporting nursery stock all over the place, because that is one way that pests are moved great distances.
Last word, but important word. Thank you all for joining us today. That was Aaron Bergdahl, a forest pathologist with the Maine Forest Service at the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. Also with us for the hour, Bill Berman, a certified master landscaper, arborist, and forester who founded Berman Land and Tree Company. And CJ Walk manages the orchard program for MOFCA and the Maine Heritage Orchard. Today's sound engineer was Jessica Miller, Maine Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.